So the young people today are the future voters of tomorrow, and I think it's really important that we have a generation that is supportive of sex worker rights, not because they think it's cool and not because they think, oh, yes, queen, like, get that coin, like, empower women, like, that kind of fucking bullshit that people say. I want people to be supportive of sex worker rights because they recognise.
In 1837, Horace Mann created the education system, a system at the time designed to pump out factory workers and professors, the same system that is still being used today in the 21st century. Now, Mann's system is backfiring. We are being moulded by the same industrial system that has existed for close to 200 years. That system delivers us into a digital economy that has no need of our outdated skills. This isn't our teachers' fault. This isn't the government's fault. This is due to a rapidly changing world full of technology and unforeseen circumstances. And us Gen Zs are caught in the middle. Welcome to the Driven Young Podcast, the podcast for stressed, overwhelmed young Australians, teaching you practical life skills you can implement now to set yourself up in life. And now your host, Byron Dempsey.
Welcome back to the Driven Young Podcast, and today I'm joined by Tilly Lawless. Tilly is a sex worker who has been in the industry for close to 10 years. She also has a degree in history, has spoken out about sex worker rights, done an amazing TED Talk, and is now a published author. This is a bit of a different episode from a normal Driven Young episode. Of course, it is still educational and professional, but I know I have young listeners out there, so I wanted to make it clear in the intro what this episode is all about. This episode is all about the sex work industry. Tilly has been in the industry for close to 10 years and shares her story about how she got into it, what she's learned, how she wrote a book about it, the benefits and the downside of sex work, her opinion on OnlyFans and other things, and just an overall understanding of what this world is like. This was a very interesting episode for me, as I know next to nothing about this industry and space, and I felt like I was going in very cold. I learned a lot and have a very fresh perspective of workers in the industry, and hopefully you do as well. There is some swearing, and we're covering topics such as sex and sex trafficking, so please keep that in mind depending on how old you are when you get to listen to this episode. But as I said, of course, it's still educational, and I'm sure you'll learn some stuff as well. As per usual, please DM myself or Tilly if you enjoy the episode. Sign up to my 20 Things to Stop Doing in Your 20s challenge if you haven't already. The link is below. And please consider leaving a rating or review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify if you have a spare 10 seconds. That would really help me out. Now, over to Tilly. Tilly, welcome to the podcast.
No, thank you.
Very excited about this episode. I just finished watching your TED Talk this morning. I was doing a bit of research. So you're a sex worker. Mm-hmm. And I mean, this conversation, I'm not sure where we're going to go. I'd love to just start off with like your story. Kind of the question I always ask is, what did you do after high school? And I guess kind of everything in between. So I guess we'll start off with that. Like, what did you do after high school? What was going on in your head? What were you pursuing? What was kind of like just going on for you?
So I got a scholarship to go to Sydney Uni. Equity scholarship, as they call it. To try and encourage people from regional areas and financial disadvantage to go to uni, which it's really funny because I didn't tell anyone about that at the time because I was really embarrassed that I didn't get an academic scholarship. I thought it meant I wasn't smart enough for an academic scholarship. And it hasn't been till later years when people have made like huge assumptions about my class and the money I've come from, which I haven't come from money because of the fact that I'm articulate, that I've been like, you know, I'm actually tertiary educated because I got an equity scholarship, not because I came from a wealthy background, you know. I think it's a huge assumption that, oh my God, I'm going on such a tangent, but I just think it's a huge assumption that working class people can't be articulate, you know. Anyway, so I went to uni and struggled along first year on Centrelink, thank God for Centrelink, and doing a bit of babysitting and a little bit of cash in hand bar work. And then when I was 20, second year in Sydney, oh, sorry, I should say I grew up in a small town in northern New South Wales.
Yeah,
so I moved like 600 Ks to go to uni. And so I was, you know, living out of home, didn't have family support in any way, was having to pay rent, all that stuff. And, you know, Centrelink's good, but
it's not much.
Not much in Sydney.
Especially in Sydney.
Yeah. I mean, not much anyway, but yeah, definitely not much in Sydney with rent. So second year of uni, I was like, fuck, I need to be making some more money than this. So I was actually in a gender studies tute. I feel like this is quite a stereotype. In a gender studies tute with a girl I'd just met, and I was like, I've been thinking of trying. I probably called it prostitution at the time because I feel like I wouldn't even have known the term sex work necessarily. But I was like, I've been thinking of trying it. And she was like, me too. So we started an escort agency together.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
You started your own agency?
No, I started at an escort agency. Oh my God, started my own agency. What capital would have I had for that?
Yeah.
I started at an escort agency. Did that for like 2 or 3 months, but didn't like, at the time it was, you know, working 8 p.m. till 6 a.m. and I was still going to uni, you know? So it was very difficult having those late nights and like rolling out of bed to go to a lecture in the, you know, morning or whatever. So I changed to massage parlor work. And then I went from massage parlor work. I did massage parlor work for a few years, full service massage parlor work. Full service just means, in the sex industry, that means penetrative sex.
Mm-hmm.
And then I moved to brothel work, private escorting. And now, 9 years later, I'm still doing full service sex work, mainly in brothels.
Yeah. Amazing. I mean, there's so much to like unpack here. First of all, did you end up completing your degree and do you use
it? Yes, I did my degree. I mean, do I use it? I did a history degree, so I feel like I use it just in my everyday. Mm. I feel like having a basic knowledge of history or maybe a more in-depth knowledge of history is really important. I mean, it helps me a lot with my clients. I meet clients from all different places and it means I can like reference something and then we can like have a conversation about things. So I feel like it definitely does help me in my work, but have I used it in terms of a career sense? No. Mm.
I mean, real quick tangent, because this isn't the point of the episode, but I do like something when I finished high school, I was like, man, I wish I learned more history.
Yeah.
Like it's so useful to know where we come from. Like I just mentioned, I'm reading a book about human history and like, I find it so fascinating, but in high school, I found it so boring the way they taught it. And so I think it'd be a very fascinating degree.
Oh, totally. It helps you so much. And it helps you just seeing the patterns in history. Like I remember when the lockout laws first happened here, because we were talking about them before. I was like, oh, everyone is going to last about, you know, 5 years or so, because they actually tried lockout laws in the 1920s in Sydney for a similar reason. And they found that it didn't actually reduce alcohol-related violence, because actually what happened was people went out earlier in the evening and tried to smash more drinks earlier on before they got locked out of the pubs, you know? So I was like, give it like 5 years, it'll be like, you know, wound back. And that's exactly what happened, you know? So it helps with just everything and everyday interpretation of stuff, I think. Yeah.
Well, we'll go back to, I guess, what was going on in your head. Obviously, yeah, a lot of stigmas go when going with that job. How did you find, I guess, going into that industry?
Incredibly anticlimactic.
Right.
In that, you know, there's so much said about sex work that you think it's going to like irrevocably change you when you first have sex for money. I think, to be honest, my experience of it is really influenced by the fact that I am basically a lesbian and that probably changed. Having sex with men for me is quite meaningless anyway.
Right.
So because I don't place any emphasis on it, it probably doesn't matter so much that I exchange money for it, you know? Yeah. Like it's not like I'm ruining something that's sacred to me, you know?
A big emotional connection each
time. Yeah, exactly. So I'd only had sex with one. I'd always slept with women up till I was 19, first fucked a guy when I was 19. And then a few months later started sex work. So looking back, like, I mean, escort agencies don't pay the greatest. That place used to take 50%, you know?
50, wow.
Yeah. So like, whereas when you're doing private work, all of it's yours. Right. Or even when you're at a brothel, like the cut's usually more like 70% your way. So 50% for full service with kissing and stuff, like, you know, they were really getting the better end of the bargain. But I was so naive as to where was the best place to work. And also I had definitely swallowed those kind of things we're told as to what is the best and safest kind of sex work, you know, like in the sex industry, we call it the hierarchy, like the hierarchy that is perceived to exist within sex work. And I assumed that an escort agency was the best way to work. You know, I've since found out that I make way more money at a full service massage parlor or brothel than I did at an escort agency. But at the time at 20 and not knowing anything, it was like, ooh, escort, you know, like this must be the best of the best.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same a lot of things, even with like with what I'm doing. When I get a brand deal, I'm like, oh, there's so much money. And then someone's like, that's not much money, Byron. You could be asking for triple. And I'm like, oh, really?
Yeah.
And so it's like, it's kind of like just a classic young and naive. And you're like,
totally.
Like,
and they take advantage of that. They know that you're young and naive. Yeah.
And so I guess this is where you kind of started out. You've been doing it for a while now. And I guess you're not just a sex worker now. You spread a lot of awareness. You try like, you've built yourself up as a bit of a figure. You've got a TED talk. You really talk a lot about this industry. What would you say that like is, what do you talk about and in those talks, and what was your key message?
I mean, I still consider myself just a sex worker because my income is derived from sex work. All that like activism stuff, as people call it, like 99% of that's unpaid.
Really?
And I'm not trying to make a career from it because I actually personally have a kind of, I don't know, like obviously I think people should be paid for their labor, but I do think it becomes problematic in the long run if you build a career off activism, because I think when you build a career off speaking out against things that are wrong, in a way you're invested in the system staying the same, because if the system changes, you'll no longer have a career.
It's kind of like me. I talk a lot about the education system. My long-term goal is to help update the education system in Australia. And I'm like, if that happens,
you'll be obsolete.
Yeah.
That's great. If you're happy with being obsolete, that's wonderful. Well, I mean, but
if that happens, I'll be very happy because that's the and I'll move on to something else. I'll figure something out.
Well, because you think those things are more important than you having a career.
Oh, 100%.
Exactly. So I see it that way with activism. Like, I think the things that I'm speaking about in regards to sex worker rights, not just me speaking about, but like many other sex workers speak about, are more important than me building a career off the back of that.
Yeah.
So I don't personally think of myself as an activist or anything like that because that's not how I derive my income, you know? But I guess I am also a writer. That is something, because I do get paid for some writing, and I have had a book. So like, I feel like that is something that I could consider as an aspect of me. But what was the original question?
I was just asking like, how would you describe yourself? So you've kind of nailed
it. Oh, yeah. Okay, perfect. Yeah, I've described it.
So you're a sex worker first?
Yeah.
And you've just done a few talks and you've got your book out now, which is, I haven't read it, but I read a bit of a synopsis. It's like a fictional story based on real life events.
I mean, they call it autofiction, which is a phrase I hate. I mean, I would probably call it semi-autobiographical fiction.
Right.
Just because I feel like autofiction is associated with like a very particular kind of New York style book that like I don't think of. But you don't get to choose the way your book's described by a publishing house and stuff.
Yeah. And so what was that like? So the book's like based on stories that are happening in real life. It's a different character and different names and everything, of course. And what's the objective of the book? Is it like a entertainment or an entertainment and awareness or something?
A fun project? Probably both. I mean, I guess one of my aims in writing it was to show that, because I feel like sex work is always relegated to the genre of memoir. I think a lot of marginalized people are relegated to the genre of memoir because what people are interested in about them is like how different they are. And, you know, I feel like that's kind of othering in the way that happens. So I was interested in writing, showing that I could, as a sex worker, write fiction that still dealt with sex work, but didn't have sex work as the problem topic. Like just had sex work as the sort of atmospheric backdrop in the same way Sydney was the backdrop, you know?
It's kind of the best way to do it.
I don't ever want to put a best on something.
Yeah, well, I think it's a great, because like one of my friends, she creates a lot of like viral videos and stuff.
Yeah.
And she did one of the most viral videos ever for International Women's Day. You've probably seen it. It was like this skit where they had basically reverse genders and they had a guy lived as a woman for a day and he puts on his Spanx at the beginning and then he's in an office of all other women. It's really funny. And then at the end they go, and then he's like walking home and the final point is like, and then bang, like 1 out of 8 women experience this.
Oh, wait, no, I do get what you're saying actually. I agree with you in that I think that sometimes when people are consuming purely nonfiction, when it comes to like human rights issues, they feel like they're being lectured to.
Yeah.
And I did feel like, there is a way to change people's minds more subtly another genre.
I think Walt Disney said it's better to entertain than educate, and you can educate through entertainment. If you look at like the Pixar movies and stuff, they all have these what interwoven messages behind them, like Finding Nemo and stuff. And they're also really entertaining.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of ties in with like the way you've written your book.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
We'll move on. So like, I guess going on to, you went into uni. How did that, I guess, what changed in your life when you started doing that? And what was it like, did you stuff happen with family or friends?
Oh, so when I first started, the first like year or two, people didn't know I was doing it besides the friend I started with and a few very close friends. I mean, what immediately changed for me was that I finally saw a whole world open up to me that I didn't think was possible. Like I went overseas the year after doing sex work, and that was something that I thought only rich kids were able to do. Because all the people I knew who were traveling at Sydney Uni, because I mean, I went to Sydney Uni and I was like thrown in with, Sydney Uni is like a lot of the kids who go there are wealthy and a lot of them are from private schools and a lot of them are able to live at home with their parents and so they're not paying rent and stuff. So I had all these bills to like grapple with that they hadn't even crossed their mind, you know, wasn't a part of their reality as 19-year-olds, you know.
Well, it's a big thing because it's like, and then they get more marks because they've got 50, yeah. They can do 40 hours, dedicate 40 hours a week to uni.
They don't have to work.
Well, you've got to do all the stuff because I was like the same in the area I came up from, like a public school area. We're not poor by any means, but you had to pay for everything yourself.
Totally.
And it's like, you've got to work an extra, you lose 30 hours a week just to be equivalent to them. And they've probably still got a nicer house and nicer food. 100%.
And they're probably being cooked for.
Yeah.
Like, it's just like, don't have to think about when they're eating and all that kind of stuff. So for me, I was like, I just thought that travel was something you could maybe do with your family once, but then, otherwise it was purely something rich kids could do. So like it changed my perspective on the world and my future.
Once you had money coming in.
To have the kind of money that I could be like, oh my God, like I could buy a flight overseas and I could see places, you know? And it also, I mean, it just also brought a concept of financial stability. Like I might. I'd come from, you know, like my background as a child, like we were definitely like didn't have to worry about money, but things disintegrated through my like teens till like things were like really not good with like my dad by like my late teens, as in financially. So and when you grow up with like money stress from your parents, you kind of absorb that it's always going to be that way.
I teach this. When I teach the money and finance, I say, no, you guys probably have beliefs based on how you've seen money dealt with in the family. If your parents have had issues, and money is the number one cause of divorce in Australia, financial stress. And so if your parents have constantly fought over it, you're going to have a negative association with money.
Yeah.
There's also the association, like, especially today, we perceive rich people as kind of evil almost and like, you know, capitalistic. And then we go, if that's your perception, then you're going to not want to get money because you're not going to want to be like them.
I mean, I do perceive rich people as
like the mega rich sort of thing.
Not
like, you know, the average person, but like billionaires and stuff. And so there's so much mental stuff that goes on with money.
Yeah.
So I can totally understand, like, it would have been like a, oh my God, like almost a surreal experience. Like, I've got money coming in, I can do this.
Completely.
Do
this. And also, the money that you make from sex work is instant cash, you know, you can see a direct correlation between the work you've done and what you've paid. You're not waiting for the pay cycle 2 weeks. You're getting the cash at the end of a shift. And there's a real high and also a power in that, you know. And there's also something knowing that you will always have your body. I mean, not necessarily. Like you could, like that's thinking from a perspective of someone who's always been able-bodied, know. Like I could have something happen that means I don't have my body to work with.
But in general,
like you're like, oh my God, like I could fail my degree and this could happen and this could happen, blah, blah, blah. But I'm still going to be able to walk into a brothel and there's still going to be men who want to fuck me, you know, and I can walk out of there with cash, you know. And as I said, that's also speaking from the perspective of someone who's wide and slim and like all that kind of stuff. But there is something really reassuring about that.
Especially because you may have had financial problems as a child. So you probably prioritize that. Because you've experienced what it's like not to have money.
Oh yeah, no, totally.
And it's
like
totally. It's so stressful.
I never wanted to. I saw my dad, you know, in his 60s, not having superannuation, not owning a home, struggling with rentals, not like. And I was like, I never want to live like that in my old age. Like, I never want to have to be. You know, there were times when he had to borrow money off me, and I was like, I never want to have to borrow money off my children. You know. Like, and so, yeah, sex work was really wonderful. And like, that's one of the reasons I've stuck with it for almost 10 years. And I have no plans to leave, you know, is because of the financial stability. And also, I mean, the flexibility of the work, like being able to set your own hours and things like that. Like, that's a really wonderful thing that I especially am grateful for when I see my friends now in 9-to-5 jobs that just leave them so exhausted. And I'm like, wow, I can really set my hours. You know, I can work 6 days in 1 week if I want and then have 2 weeks off. Yeah. And like, there's no.
I mean, here you are on a Monday morning at 11 o'clock.
Yeah, totally. So anyway, yeah. Sorry. I don't know what the question was anymore. So I was like, fuck, I'm just talking.
No, I don't know that. I didn't ask. I tried to ask you a few questions on the podcast and just like bounce off. But yeah, I think the for you, the, I guess obviously you lack the emotional attachment. So it's quite, you enjoy it, and the money and the stability is a bunch of things on top of it, which I guess is important to get across, because like the whole world has such negative associations with sex workers, right? Mm-hmm. Like I saw in your TED talk, you mentioned there were like a bunch of really successful women who like signed something.
Oh, Lena Dunham and all that. Yeah. Meryl Streep and stuff. Yeah. Signed. I mean, there are so many celebrities. Most 99% of American celebrities are anti-sex work. Like America is just so hugely anti-sex work because they conflate it completely with sex trafficking. And also because...
Which is, sorry, do you want to explain what sex trafficking is for anyone who might not?
So sex trafficking, I mean, it's really complicated because there's the... I mean, I guess the definition I would give is when someone has been forced or coerced into the sex industry, doesn't have control over the way they work, doesn't have access to their earnings, like that's being held by someone else. And it usually involves, I think it always has to involve a crossing of borders, you know, a crossing I don't think you can be, they would call it, or maybe it doesn't involve a crossing, but often it involves a crossing of like international borders. Mm. Trafficking occurs in most, if not every industry. The majority of trafficking occurs into domestic labor. Mm. So like servants in households and things like that. But no one ever talks about getting rid of all domestic labor to stop the trafficking issue. Mm. The sex industry is the only industry where they say we have to shut down the industry to stop trafficking.
Right.
It's like obviously trafficking is fucking awful. Like you'll never find a sex worker who's pro trafficking. It's fucking disgusting because obviously it's rape if someone doesn't want to be doing that.
Or like know? Consistently.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Just rape like every day sort of thing. The example for anyone listening, if you've seen Taken, have you seen Taken?
No.
Well, you know the line Liam Neeson is like, his daughter gets taken.
Right.
And she gets trafficked and you kind of see them show that. So
I
that's
mean,
like a
I
visual.
Tend to not watch those films because a lot of the time they're feeding this huge paranoia that people have around sex trafficking. And it's like, why aren't we watching films about domestic trafficking if that's the main issue, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a classic American, a rich white girl like gets kidnapped in the middle of nowhere in a
and
hotel.
And people care more about a rich white girl than a poor black girl, for example. But what I was going to say was also the issue with trafficking is – in a lot of countries, trafficking is defined as when someone is brought across borders into the sex industry.
Right.
So an example of what can happen, you could have a woman in Thailand who's been doing sex work for many years, wants to immigrate to Australia because she has a chance of a better life and better income, pays someone to get her over to Australia. Then when she gets to Australia, has a debt to pay off to that person.
Right.
She has to work off her debt to pay that back before she's free to work as she wishes.
It's almost like a slave.
Saying she's a slave, that's the way the law would look at it. They go, she's a slave. She's been trafficked. We are deporting her back to Thailand, right?
They deport her back. It's more laid than that.
They deport her back to Thailand. What happens when she's back in Thailand? She's back where she started. She has to pay off the debt that she was trying to pay back in Australia. How has that helped anyone in that scenario? You know? So unfortunately, like a lot of this like trafficking stuff is like also like obviously there are people who are fully kidnapped and forced into the sex industry, and that's fucking disgusting. But trafficking often has, when people cry trafficking, there's often no nuance in how they're looking at the situation. Also, people always think migrant brown women are trafficked. They always assume migrant brown women or migrant Asian women can't consent to being in the sex industry, right? Like, no one's saying if, like, anyway, it's just a really...
No, I get what you're saying. You're saying if someone saw them as a sex worker, they would just assume that they're not doing it. They're not getting paid and they're doing it because they've been trafficked. When in reality, you're saying...
Because people also see Asian women as passive victims anyway. So they...
And the movies. The propaganda in the movies. That's always what you see in the movies. Like Taken, for example. Most of them were brown women.
Yeah. And there is a reality that there are more... I don't necessarily know if more, but there are many women of color in the sex industry. And I mean, that reality comes from the fact that women of color historically have been paid less than white women, have less access to certain industries than white women have. And as I said, the sex work is one of the few jobs where all you need is your body. Mm. You know, if that's the only resource you have in life, you can still sell a sexual service, you know? So it is a job that historically has had a lot of migrant women, a lot of women of color, a lot of trans women, a lot of queer women, a lot of working class women. You know, that has been the demographic of sex work. So some of the stereotypes you see are true, but the reasons behind those stereotypes are more complicated, you know? It's not these women are in that because they're weak and defenseless and can't consent and have no autonomy. It's like, what are the systemic issues that are making these women overrepresented in the sex industry, you know?
That's a great line.
Yeah.
Like, what are the reasons is such a high amount of this type of person and whatever the situation is, but it's like, it's so easy just to be like, oh, it's because of this or this. It's like, well, let's look at a deeper level.
Yeah,
let's really pull back the onion.
Exactly. And I mean, that's one of the issues with trafficking is people, because trafficking conjures up images of like rape and things like that, and like it's obviously like a really awful thing. People are scared to even talk about the nuances for fear that someone says they're pro-trafficking, you know? And I mean, the other thing is people are also so much more concerned with sex trafficking than, as I said, with trafficking into other industries. No one's panicking about, for example, the trafficking of islanders into Australia for cheap labor, you know? Or like, for example, the backpackers who are being used as really cheap labor around Australia, which, to be honest, is a form of trafficking. If you want to define trafficking as someone who comes from another country to a new country and is exploited because they can be exploited in a way that the citizens can't be exploited, what's going on in those farms right now is trafficking.
So you're saying there's a lot of similarities between those three things. Like the sex trafficking and then the two other
examples. They're all trafficking, but no one cares about the way the farm workers are being treated because there's no sex involved.
Mm.
And people are so much more concerned when sex is involved than when just exploitation of the body happens without sex, you know? So like that's the really fucking, you know, I guarantee you could have someone who owns their own veggie garden, right? You could be interviewing someone who in the inner west who grows their own veggie garden and promotes like sustainable eating or whatever here. You would not ask them about trafficking. Trafficking occurs in the food industries, but you wouldn't ask them about it. Exactly. But I get asked about it, you know? So that's what's really...
So it's like, it's almost like associations.
But also it's a fucking distraction, you know? Like, I'm wanting to talk about sex worker rights. That's what I'm interested in, is sex worker rights and how it's tied to labor rights, how it's tied to workers' rights. And I get asked about trafficking constantly. None of these people in other industries are being asked about trafficking. When a model's interviewed, no one says, and this also could be seen as a form of trafficking. You know how models are often brought from non-Western countries to a country like America, for example. They are in debt to their agency. They don't get paid for their first modeling jobs because they have to pay off their debt. That's exactly what happens with some sex workers.
The example you just gave us, exactly
the same example. But no one is sitting at a table with a model and saying, so what do you think about these other models who are trafficked into modeling? You know, like,
I think this has been a super interesting insight.
So,
like, because, you know, I never thought about this stuff. Like, you don't think, like, you're right. You're just saying the examples you gave, if you just strip them to like logic, it's the same things.
Yeah.
Someone's moving from a country. They've got to pay off their debt. The only difference is there's no sex involved.
Yeah.
And so, I can't remember how we got on this tangent.
You asked me about trafficking.
Because could you define trafficking real quick?
And then you're like, fuck. They said this is just like such a like, what was like, the original? What is it? Nest of worms. What's the expression?
Rabbit hole.
Rabbit hole, but worm. There is an expression that's something about worms. I don't know. Anyway.
Oh, that was the original question. The like Anne Hathaway and that came out. So you're saying
Americans see the perception of sex. All sex work is trafficking. Americans are just so Puritan, though. Like, I mean, the the cultural background is very Puritan. But yeah, you know, they bring models on in special visas constantly, and the models have to pay off huge debts to the agency and don't have control or any say over where they work, and no one's panicked about that. Like, anyway.
Well, what would you, what if you, you've got young people listening, what is a key message you want to get across to young people?
I mean, the reason I said yes to this podcast was because I remember you mentioned something about the glorification of OnlyFans and sex work on TikTok, and that interested me because I have seen a lot of those TikToks, like people will send them to me or whatever, and it has been, I mean, obviously, I mean, people sometimes glorify sex work as a reaction to the fact that so often it's demonized, you know?
So try to counterbalance it.
Yeah, so I get that. But unfortunately, like, I think we need to find everything needs to be nuanced, and there always needs to be a medium. And
we need to have a healthy middle ground.
Totally.
You're saying people are either here or here.
And like, I also don't want people, the sex industry is, like, sex work is not an easy job in any way. Like, sometimes people say it's easy money, and I always say it's not easy money, it's fast money, you know? And it does concern me if people are entering the industry with a complete fantasy, you know?
Well, that's where I reached out originally, because I looked at, like, getting different OnlyFans creators on and stuff, and I was like, how do I find someone who's, like, and you're kind of perfect. Like, you speak a lot about this sort of, this space. You're very professional as well. And I think for my generation, which I guess I'm 23, it's very glamorized, because it's almost like a multi-level marketing. You just see the people who make the top 0.1%.
Well, yeah, no, totally. And as I think I might have even said to you when we first spoke about it, like, the issue is you can be in the top 2% for a day, and you can screenshot that top 2% and refer to yourself as the top 2% forever. Like, I was in the top 2% for a day, you know? Right. Like, I did OnlyFans through the first year's lockdown. And you've got to remember, even when you are in the top 2% for the day, that means there's 98% of people who aren't making what you're making.
Exactly.
You know? I hate OnlyFans. I hate it because I think it is just another example of the gig economy.
Yeah.
And OnlyFans has shown time and again that it is happy to quit, to, you know, kick sex workers to the curb, you know? So here we are, like, giving money to a fucking platform that doesn't even care about us, doesn't want us, will get rid of us for its own relationships with, you know, Visa and MasterCard and stuff like that. And I also think it's a true distraction from more important issues at stake. So I think it's putting hyper visibility on online sex workers who are, I mean, obviously online sex workers, like, I'm not saying that they're not sex workers and don't face their own forms of, like, stigma and prejudice and stuff, because they obviously do. And especially being face out is really difficult. I understand that as someone who's also face out, you know, you can have children taken off you in custody battles. You can be denied entry to America. You can have all sorts of things happen as a result of being face out. So I'm not saying that they don't face stigma, but they are not facing the same things that in-person sex workers are facing. Mm. They are not really at risk of violence in the same way that in-person sex workers
are. I don't think anyone would dispute that.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Anyway, so I am speaking carefully because people, I don't want online sex workers coming for me.
It's something I deal with as well, because I, like, anyway, it's like, you don't want to dance around everything. It's like, your intentions are pure.
Yeah.
And you're not here to, like, bash anyone. You're like, you've got intentions, educational intentions. I think anyone listening to the podcast knows you're clearly not.
But yeah, I think the issue is that it distracts from what we really should be fighting for, which is decriminalization of sex work everywhere in the world. That's what Amnesty International supports. That's what World Health Organization supports as the best policy to enshrine the human rights of people in the sex industry. And I think all this fucking furore around OnlyFans is just a way for the media to sort of, like, cash in on a thing that people find interesting. And what really upsets me is that a lot of these people making huge amounts of money on OnlyFans and referring to themselves as a sex worker, well, because they are sex workers, don't have any time to speak about all the other sex workers who can be arrested and go to jail and who aren't making a lot of money, you know? That because I don't know, just speaking from personal opinion, like I feel such an obligation and a huge responsibility to speak about issues that affect me, but also try and uplift the voices
right.
of people who are affected by things that I'm not affected by, you know? And so you know, the term sex worker was invented in the 70s by this woman, Carol Lay, a sex worker. And, you know, before that it was, you know, full service sex workers were referred to as, would refer to themselves as prostitutes, you know? Sex worker came about as a way to actually unite the shared issues and fights of all the people within the sex industry. So it was to unite strippers and prostitutes and phone sex workers, any sort of erotic labor, sex work, as well as emphasizing the fact that sex work is work. It was also to unite them all. So it really upsets me when I see online sex workers with huge followings using that term sex worker, which came from uniting people for labor rights, not caring about all the other people in the industry who don't have the visibility of them.
Because a lot of them have built a big profile and then they go, oh, I'll cash in on OnlyFans.
Yeah.
And so they haven't...
Oh, I'm not even talking about them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that's another issue. The fucking people who are already influencers and then are like, I'm going to cat. That's gentrifying OnlyFans as far as I'm concerned. I hate that. Like, that's a whole nother issue. I was even just speaking about strippers and online sex workers who have big platforms and aren't invested in speaking about sex worker rights issues. I was thinking of someone like... I mean, she's not a sex worker anymore, but has dabbled in sex work. Julia Fox, for example, who will happily in an interview reference the fact she's been a dominatrix, lives in America, which where sex work is criminalized and has no care or regard for all the other people in the sex industry and what they have to face and doesn't seem to have any interest in speaking. She could so easily, she gets the media attention she gets, like the kind of attention she could bring to sex worker rights issues is huge, but she has no interest in doing that. So that's, and I'm not saying everyone has to be a public speaker or an advocate because like not everyone has the skills or the capacity or whatever, but you know, it would only take one sentence from her in
like
an interview.
Tweet and stuff
to get some kind of attention to that stuff. So that's, anyway.
Well, for like, because on the OnlyFans thing, it's like, I think we see a lot of people who go, a lot of young, I mean, they see a lot of videos of like, there's been countdowns of like, I don't know, do you know Bad Barbie or whatever? She's waiting to turn 18 so she can start an OnlyFans. Quite a common thing in this generation. Like, what are your thoughts on, like, the way it's become so normalised? Do you think it's dangerous, as someone who's been in the industry for almost a decade?
I mean, I'm not concerned with OnlyFans being normalised. I mean, I think, obviously, there are Bad Barbie, like, ticking off the time till she turns 18 is less a reflection on her and more
of
a reflection of society liking young women. And
like Billie Eilish as well.
Yeah, like that kind of stuff. So, like, I'm not critiquing young women who go on OnlyFans at all. I mean, I was fucking posting nudes of myself on the internet when I was like 13. You know, like I'm not concerned. I also think young people do have expressions of sexuality. You know, like I don't think that you like suddenly turn 18 and become sexual when you weren't before that. You know, I think children are sexual. That doesn't mean anyone should be sexual with children, but it doesn't mean they're not sexual. You know, so my main issue is like. Bad Barbie is so famous anyway, making money off her fame anyway. She could have her OnlyFans will inevitably make her money. Even if it did flop, it wouldn't matter. My concern is with working class women who go on OnlyFans thinking they're going to make a huge amount of money and maybe they will, but more than likely they're not. And their legal name is associated with it. OnlyFans sometimes has leaks. They aren't aware of the repercussions that can come from being associated with sex work. Like, that's my issue.
Well, I think you mentioned, like, even getting a mortgage is more difficult. There's
way more difficult because my industry is seen as precarious.
Right.
And also because I'm technically self-employed.
Oh, yes.
So, yeah. So, no, it affects everything. So that... And also people thinking that it's going to be easy work. I can tell you I found OnlyFans way more difficult and time consuming than working at a brothel.
Really?
And way less rewarding. You know, at a brothel, I have human interactions with people. You know, like I laugh with people. I have fun with them. Like, sure, it can be really difficult and I can have really awful clients.
For sure.
But there is a – I find a kind of something reassuring in the fact that I can connect with so many different people. OnlyFans I found very isolating. Being unable to even sort of like see the people I was interacting with, just being asked to film these masturbation videos constantly, like ruined my relationship with my private sexuality. Do you know what I mean? Like it took people into my private space, my bedroom, which is why it's so good for some, for many people, because it means they can work from the safety of their own home. But I hated that. I hated people being up in that part of me. Yeah, so I guess that's why I came on here. I mean, I also came on here because I would never go on TikTok myself personally just because I feel too old for it. Yeah. And I don't say that in that like mature or something. I just like I actually feel like I would feel like a toolie. Do you know that expression?
Oh, like someone who goes to schoolies who's like...
Every year when they're way older. Right. Yeah, I feel like some people, sometimes young people should just have their stuff and you should let them have it. Do you know what I mean? Because I know when I was on forums as a teenager, sometimes I'd be like, why is this 22-year-old on this forum, you know? And it's like, and you appreciate having spaces that are just for you. So I'm just like, I don't think TikTok's for me and like, that's cool.
I mean, if you can avoid it, like it's so addictive. Oh. you'll lose a lot of time on it. So if you can avoid it, I'd recommend it.
So that's also why I came on here because I was like, you access a young audience that I'm not going to access. And I think that also the young people today are the future voters of tomorrow. And I think it's really important that we have a generation that is supportive of sex worker rights, not because they think it's cool and not because they think, oh, yes, queen, like get that coin, like empower women, like that kind of fucking bullshit that people say. I want people to be supportive of sex worker rights because they recognize it is a labor-based job that many people are disadvantaged in, and sex worker like achieving rights is, I mean, exactly what I said before about Amnesty International and World Health Organization is that decriminalization is the best way to enshrine the rights of people in the sex industry, whether or not they want to be in the sex industry now, long term, whatever. It's the best way to protect them. Because like to put it simply, when you have something like criminalization, like it's like just say a woman doesn't want to be doing sex work. She's got three kids. She's really poor. She doesn't want to have to do this job, but she's doing this job because it's the only thing she can do. Someone arrests her. They put her in jail. When she gets out of jail, it's even harder for her to get a job. Like it's just like, it just repeats.
It's the ripple
effect. It repeats the cycle. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. So for me, I want people to be supporting sex worker rights for the right reasons, because I think if you're just supporting something because you think it's cool, maybe in 5 years' time you no longer think it's cool and you become anti
like it. Like a trend.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas if you're supporting it for the real issues underneath, that view is less likely to change.
And, I think this is pretty accurate. Do you think a lot of people who are like wealthier look down on it because they almost disassociate what the position they're in?
I think a lot of wealthy people look down on it for a few reasons. I think partly because it is a job that upsets the status quo that they're used to, in that it's a job that can allow working class women and migrant women and staff to quickly climb a class ladder. Oh, not necessarily class ladder, but a financial stability ladder. And I think that rich people don't like overt displays of wealth from working class women or black women or whatever, which is why I think there's such a reaction to someone like Black China, who started as a stripper, you know. So I think that's one of the reasons that rich people don't like sex work. And then I think people generally don't like sex work because they don't like when women do sex work. People are far less concerned when gay guys do sex work.
Yeah, you
know? Like no one's ever talking about, let's save gay guys from sex trafficking, you know. But are very concerned when women do sex work because women's sexuality is meant to be tied to a man's in a monogamous relationship. So women being promiscuous anyway, let alone being promiscuous for money, is like a huge issue for people.
Awesome. Well, listen, we'll wrap it up. I always end up with one final question. And this can be completely unrelated to anything we've spoken about.
Yeah.
But it's basically, what would your number one piece of advice be for an 18-year-old in today's world?
Oh my God. if you are in a job that, well, I'm thinking related to sex work, I guess. If you are in the sex industry, start a superannuation account.
Mm.
Like, or if you're in any sort of self-employed industry, start a superannuation account. It's something that I didn't think of till too late, and a lot of people I know in these kind of industries don't even think of ever. Mm. And having, I think I'm speaking especially to women because women live in, are more likely to live in poverty in their old age. It's like really, like, we can't rely on,
longer.
I wish we could rely on the state to look after us. Like, I wish we had a state that helped poor people more. But seeing as we can't, like, we need to be thinking of our old age.
Like, no, it's true. I talk about investing all the time.
Yeah.
It's, like, super great, a great thing Australia has. Take advantage of that and be smart with your money in general.
Yeah.
Like, it's an expensive city to live in, as you mentioned earlier
I mean,
on.
I also would probably say be careful about the money that you spend as well on plastic surgery and stuff. Not because there's anything wrong with plastic surgery, but because trends go in and out.
Yeah.
And the plastic surgery and makeup and all those kind of things, like, they can be wonderful self-expression. They can also be a wonderful way to access gender euphoria and all sorts of, like, other empowering things. But they're also just another industry that is set to make money off women.
Yeah.
And considering, as I just said, women are more likely to live in poverty in their old age, think about these ephemeral things that we're spending money on. Mm. And whether you need it, because trends do go in and out of fashion. Like, I don't know, when I started sex work, there was so much pressure from people, like women I worked with, because I, you know, started in 2013. And at the time, like, you know, big boobs, like fake tits were in, all that kind of stuff. There was so much pressure I got from women around me to conform to those things. Also because I, you know, supposedly would have made more money in the industry with those things, right? And I look back now and I'm so glad I didn't, because the fashion is changing again, you know?
Well, isn't it kind of fucked up? Like, women's bodies are trends. Like, you look at, like, Britney Spears in, like, early 2000s and it was skinny, you know, the hips sort of thing. And then it's now, and they went to, like, the Kim Kardashian style and everything. And now they're talking about BBLs is, like, super trendy right now. And it's, like, it's a really good point. Because it's, like, don't, because just like a clothing trend, except it's a bit more permanent.
Totally. Don't pour all, I mean, would you pour all your money into a clothing trend? I don't know. Like, so that's something I think about, and I'm just glad I didn't spend money on. Mm. Yeah, because I have had a lot of, you know, the other thing about being in the sex industry is you think that your good days are going to reflect what you earned forever, whereas it really goes up and down. And I know a lot of women who, when they started, thought they were going to keep earning at the rate that they earned when they were young, and so spent the cash freely, not thinking about the fact that it slows down.
Lifestyle inflation. Yeah. They call it. It's like the more money you earn, the more money you spend.
Yeah.
It's like everyone succumbs to it. Yeah. Everyone. Yeah. So it's like, that's why we talk about, don't save, like, you know, $1,000 a month, save 10%. Because that way, when you earn more money, or save 20%, the percentage goes up with it.
Yeah.
Because, if people get a raise, more people, like, on like $200,000 a year have more debt traditionally than someone on $100,000 a year, because they've got nicer cars, nicer watches. They want to fit in with all their rich friends. They want to get a nicer home. And then they're just, you know, kind of ticking the boxes and everything. So lifestyle inflation is a point I really drive home, because everyone succumbs to it. It's almost impossible not to, but just by being consciously aware of it and going, all right, I'm earning more money now, that means I can save more and invest that into, like, your future self. Because you mentioned, like, we're more likely to be in poverty, and something like women live on average 5 years longer. Mm. So you're going to need 5 years
need
more
money,
retirement.
Yeah.
But listen, Tilly, thanks so much for coming to the show. Are there any final points that you'd like to
I mean, there's so many things that I could speak more about, but there's nothing that I'm like, must finish on that. Yeah.
Covered all the essentials.
Yeah.
Well, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate you, you know, sharing your story and talking about all the stuff. I'm very excited for this episode. And, just real quick, I love, because I guess there's something I've dealt with, probably not to your level. How do you find dealing with, like, backlash and comments on social media, and, like, because you put yourself out there?
I mean, I'm on private, so I don't get a lot of, if I get a shit comment from someone, I just block them.
Yeah.
And being on private actually hugely protects you. I mean, also, I just think I care very little. The older I've gotten, I mean, I always don't think I've cared much about other people's opinions.
That's good.
But
it's
the older best. I've gotten, the less and less I care. I care about the opinions of people who I know and respect,
yes.
you know, and who I value and trust their opinion. And so, of course, I'll listen to criticism from people who I respect. But from anonymous people on the internet, like, means nothing.
I think it's just being truly you, being authentically you. It's like, if you're authentically you, you don't care what people think, except for, you know, close friends and people you respect. But yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Amazing. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, again, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. If people want to get your book, follow you online, get in touch with, like, what's the best place to go for all that?
My Instagram, which is @Tilly_Lawless. Yep. That's like pretty much the only social media I use. Yeah.
And I'll put that in the link in bio. But otherwise, thanks so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.